we must know what is the difference between scientific knowledge and philosophical knowledge. Because then we shall be able also to understand the life divine better, because life divine is a philosophical work. And therefore it has followed philosophical method. It is not a scientific book. It's not a book of science. Now, in contrast to the life divine, we have another book, The Synthesis of Yoga. Now, Synthesis of Yoga has a different method. Their philosophy is also used, but the method of exposition in Synthesis of Yoga is scientific. That is because yoga is not a philosophy, yoga is science. And therefore, in the Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo follows a different method of exposition. We must be able to appreciate, from a technical point of view, how Life Divine's method of exposition is philosophical, and how the exposition which is done in the Synthesis of Yoga follows a scientific method. It's a scientific exposition. And because there is a connection between philosophy and science in one way or the other, you will find scientific method also in the Life Divine and philosophic method also in the Synthesis of Yoga. But it is, these are only subordinate. Why do intellectuals of today very largely believe that knowledge can be only philosophy, only scientific? And why do they believe that philosophy is not the right method of arriving at knowledge? If this statement is true, that philosophy is not a useful method, then the relevance of the Life Divine would be in question. What is the justification of writing such a great philosophical work if philosophy is basically not a very useful activity? The reason behind is this. In science, you arrive at a conclusion by basic method of observation of facts. You observe facts, and your conclusion is strictly tied to the facts. It is true that in a scientific method, you add to the observation certain other things which are so-called permissible in a scientific pursuit, and therefore they constitute a part of scientific method. Observation is the starting point of science. Then experimentation is the second step. But experimentation has also the aim of collecting further facts which are not normally available directly without experimentation. Now, this experimentation gives you additional facts. Then there's a question of coordinating these facts with those facts. Facts by direct observation and facts by experimentation. And you coordinate them. In the process of coordinating, some intellectual process is involved. Observation is not fundamentally a process of intellection. observation is a part of experience. When you observe, you experience. You experience the facts. When you make an experiment, is also experience of facts, additional facts. When you coordinate, then intellection arises. It is added, as it were, for coordinating purposes. To compare one set of facts with other set of facts. In fact, if you ask the question, what is the origin of intellectual movement? It starts when you compare one sense experience with another sense experience. When two sense experiences are to be compared, this is the starting point. You start intellectual process when you compare. Now, this is a special faculty of human beings. That's why it is said that rationality is a special mark of human beings, which animals of other lower order do not possess. This possibility of comparing one sense experience with another, and then so many sense experiences with other sense experiences, and the method by which you coordinate, that is the realm of intellectuality. Comparison implies also a process of contrast. It also implies a process of analogy. And more importantly, two important processes of what is called deduction and induction. And then finally, the process of what is called implication. So you might say that entire realm of intellectual development consists of these processes: comparison, contrast, deduction, induction, analogy, and implication. Any activity in which you do these operations is intellectual in character. If it was possible for human beings to arrive at the totality of the whole world in one single experience, the whole world to be known directly by one experience, then there is no need for the intervention of intellectual operations at all. As long as I see an experience directly, I know it. The moment there is another experience and there is a question of coordination of the two, intellectual development is involved. This is a great connection between intellectual development and experiential development. This is very important to note. If, however, you can arrive at one single experience of the totality of the whole world and all that is beyond the world, then there is nothing to compare with, no contrast, no inference, no analogy, no deduction, no induction, no implication. It is one single experience of knowledge. Now, scientists, however, know that no experience is singly obtained. The scientist proceeds by ordinary levels of experience, of sense observation, sense perception. And you know that sense perception is always having a limited field. It cannot have, senses are not capable of bringing the entire totality in one sweep. Such is not the nature of sense experience. It's not possible. The question is there any such possibility of having a totality of experience in one sweep? No, if not sensuous, any other scientists would say, let us have an example of such an experience. That is their approach. And as I told you, the distance between intellectual operation and sense experience, on the one hand, and the spiritual experience is so great that most of the people who are only confined to sense experience and intellectual experience, they are not able to understand at all, not always, but very largely, they are incapable of understanding a possibility of a spiritual experience at all. Therefore, they would say there is no such thing as spiritual experience. We should confine ourselves to sense experience and intellectual operation, which aims at coordinating sense experiences of various kinds. And whatever is result, whatever is the result of this, is knowledge. Particularly when that knowledge expressed in language can be repeated, can be verified, and can be falsified. These are the three marks. You should be able to repeat, you should be able to verify, you should be able to falsify. In the attempt of falsification, when you cannot falsify, then you are obliged to accept it. But you should, whatever is given to you should be at least capable of being falsified. Attempt should be possible. This is what is now called scientific method, which consists of observation, experimentation, analogy, implication, deduction, induction. This is all that science consists of.